Hello and welcome back. We are talking about international business, and now we are on chapter 2, which talks about the basis behind international business. I am Nelson Fernandez, and I am going to take you through this chapter. So what are the learning objectives for this chapter? We are going to understand the basis behind the foreign trade policies that are framed by various governments, or an Indian government of course. We are going to learn about the present challenges in international business. And we are going to learn, and you will be able to learn and understand about the various theories or various bases which exist, which drive international business or which are behind international business. So let's see, let's go forward. Now here is a classic case which is there, which is presented in your books. This is an article written by Mr. Ravi Bajaj, and I would really request you all to please read this article thoroughly. Now I'll just give you a brief background of what it is. Now, being in the logistics industry, we get a lot of updates from our foreign agents. Now, last year around in June, we got an update from the agents that suddenly they are holding back all the shipments moving towards India from China. Now, when we tried to inquire about it, we got to understand that there is some regulation or some restriction being imposed by the Indian government for imports from China, which even the Indians were not aware of, because it was a sudden development. Then further investigating further, we could understand that there is some sort of restriction, and that is also the time where the situation was tense between India and China on the borders. Now many containers, later on the containers moved, but there was a lot of restriction. All containers were examined. Whatever containers came into the port were compulsorily asked for examination, sometimes even 100% examination, where you had to take out everything from the container, show to the custom authorities, list up the containers and take it to the warehouse locations. So that created a lot of chaos, got a lot of panic, lot of unrest between people, between the importers over here, because they were not sure whether they should go ahead with their shipments which are there pending in the pipeline, or they should hold the shipments. So you please read this case study, you will understand what I am trying to say, because Mr. Rajiv Bajaj has explained that pretty well. So let's move forward. Now foreign trade policies and its basis. Now international business has become fundamental to everybody's life. We all know it. We are involved somewhere or other in international business. For example, what you see is electronic goods that you use for your work, for your entertainment. Now it is not necessary that it is made in India. Some of them may be, but most of them are imported, either made in China or Malaysia or Japan, wherever. The vehicles that we drive, the foods that we eat, the clothes that we wear, everything will find most of the things coming from abroad or some internal locations from India, some of them definitely. So either manufactured in various locations in India, you staying in Mumbai or you staying in Pune or you staying in Delhi, you are not using local products which are manufactured in that particular location, but you are using products which are manufactured around the country, or sometimes even manufactured in other countries. Now during the last few years, international trade has been influenced by certain parameters. Now some of them are trade imbalances, there have been economic wars between countries, there has been disparity between the demand supply across regions. And there have been other economic and political aspects which have also disturbed the international trade, or has influenced it to an extent that it has dropped down. Now, not to forget the pandemic which was there, which was caused by COVID-19, which was across the globe. Now, this has slowed down international trade to a great extent, because many of the exporters which were there were not able to export their goods. Many of them stopped importing because they couldn't sell it in the local market, and so on. So the pandemic also has played a major role where the affecting of international trade is concerned. Now here are some data which is there. According to the data provided by WTO, UNCTAD, world merchandise trade volumes, average that is, of exports and import, has decreased by around 14.3% in the second quarter of 2020 over the previous quarter, in the seasonal adjustment term. So this means basically there has been a fall of exports and imports and overall international trade by almost by 14.3%, which is quite a huge number. Now the economies across the globe implemented strict lockdowns measures throughout the period of the combat of COVID-19. which has led to this sharp decline. Because even in India, we met many of the manufacturers who were manufacturing of products of engineering and so on. But they were not allowed to open their plants to manufacture because that did not fall in the essential category. Many of the people who had imported goods, imported raw material for manufacture, they couldn't open up the plants and the raw material was just lying. When the pandemic started in February, people had not taken deliveries up to June and July because they were not sure what is going to happen, whether it's going to open now or other. But when they understood that this is going to continue, they started clearing their goods and taking deliveries of their goods. But still, they couldn't manufacture because their locations where the manufacturing plant were under strict lockdowns. So all this has led to a sharp decline in trade volumes. Now, here are some interesting figures for you to see. Now, this is the export values year on year and this is the import values. Now, if you see the world over, the export value has dropped down by minus 21%. Whereas the import has dropped down again by minus 27%, which is almost the same. Now, if you see region wise, Northern America, Southern America, Europe, Asia and others, if you see there's a sharp decline in North American exports. And imports has dropped down by minus 23%. South Central America, the import has dropped down by 26%, but the export has dropped down by 19%. Same way we go to Europe. Europe exports have dropped down by minus 23%. Asia, it is minus 10%. And here there are other countries which have dropped down by 39%, minus 13%. And same applies over here with year on year for imports also, where if you see the imports in Europe have dropped down by minus 22%, whereas in Asia it is minus 17%, and other countries put together, other locations, it is around minus 24%. So if you see overall, there has been a sharp decline in exports and imports due to these various factors or various reasons that we have seen. Now, what are the existing challenges in international business? Now, international business also is faced with a lot of international business challenges. Some of them, the growth of international business base rather has gone is due to some of the factors like free trade policies, fair trade policies, inward looking policies, outward looking policies. So let's try to see what are these. I'm talking about free trade policies. Now in this, the government does not have put any restrictions on imports and exports. You're free to export, you're free to import. Now, your classic examples would be trade blocks, various trade blocks like the European Union, like the North American Free Trade Agreement, which is NAFTA. Even in Asia, we have ASEAN. Now, all these trade blocks have free movement of exports and imports. Now, all this have been established for basically to promote regional trade in these groups. Now, now, where India is concerned, we have to talk about 1991, which everybody knows, where India was in a lot of financial deficit. That time the Dr. Manmohan Singh also was the finance minister. And that point of time, he introduced a lot of reforms, which basically liberalized trade and also opened up the Indian trade and free trade policy. Okay, with the liberalization trade policies, India is now poised to become a competitive economy and an export hub for diverse industry, which is software, service, automobiles, and even auto ancillaries. So this is where the real the trade started. And it is also said that it is around this time, whichever countries had opened, like some of the countries like India had opened up, Vietnam had opened up. All these countries stand to gain a lot during this last 20 years. Now, looking for inward-looking trade policies. Now, what are inward-looking trade policies? Now, these are basically targeted to see what is the import substitution, how imports can be substituted, how these products can be manufactured in India. Currently, you must be knowing about Make in India policy. So, aim for import substitutions. Now, how they do it? Sometimes they add some trade barriers to it. Like, for example, if now solar cells were all imported from various locations. Now when there's a plant which is made in India by putting a lot of investments, Now, definitely the government will try to protect that industry so that it flourishes. The aim of, again, inward-looking trade policies are also trying to become more self-sufficient. How they can be self-sufficient and reduce of imports from that particular location. It also gives import emphasis to protectionism, which, as I mentioned, that if there is a particular industry which is now just started, initialized, and it is started to grow, now government will try to protect that policy by putting a lot of trade barriers, ADDs, which is anti-dumping duties, or importing some regulations on the import of the products to protect this particular industry. There are also outward-looking trade policies. Now, what are outward-looking trade policies? The main aim of outward-looking policy is to grow in exports, to expand in export. Now, this is export. This is mainly adopted, if you see, by a lot of tiger economies such as Singapore, South Korea, Taiwan, Dubai, Thailand, and so on. Even India is very aggressive where this is concerned. So, India also has a lot of outward-looking trade policy. Now, this will result in an increase in standard of living, which is very important. So, we have outward-looking trade policies. Now, foreign trade policy, which was introduced in April 2015, spoke about a lot of boost of global trade, of setting up of various trade councils, national committees for trade facilitation. Now, the aim for this was to increase the export of India from the current 2% to 3.5% by 2020. Now, India also earlier struggled to reach the point of 2%. It took a lot of efforts to reach the point of 2% also. Now the aim is to reach 3.5% by 2020. Now, the aim, how they are going to do is, they are going to aim by reduction of transaction cost of traders. Now, the government has done a lot of efforts in where reducing of the transactional cost is concerned. They have been able to reduce the transaction cost to a drastic extent. But then this has also affected some of the existing industry when this sort of trade transaction cost reduction was done to benefit the exporters. So the government has to look for a balance where they introduce such sort of measures to cut down the cost. The new policy, which was effective from April 2021, now normally all foreign trade policies are for 5 years period. Now, this aims for channelizing and, the synergies gained through the merchandise and service exports for employment and growth to make India a $5 trillion economy. Now, this is how we are talking about, that the growth of export will go from existing 2% to 3.5%. As per the commerce industry, what they are going to do, how they are going to achieve this is, they are going to establish district export hubs initiative, which has been taken up now, where each district is going to be also playing a role to become an export hub by itself. Okay, so this is a very significant policy, which will be implemented by the government. And this will take time, and this will be implemented in a phased manner. So there will be a lot of cooperation also required from all the various state governments also. Now, here are some of the existing challenges to international business. Now, some countries use various methods to protect domestic businesses. In fact, many of them do that. From the competition arising from two other firms entering from another countries to their markets. Basically, everybody wants to protect their industry because everybody wants to become self-reliant or independent. Now, they adopt various protection methods. Some of the methods what they use are various barriers like tariff barriers, and there would be also non-tariff barriers. So now just let me see what are the tariff and non-tariff barriers. Now, based on tariff, there would be export tariff is a tariff which is normally levied on or from the goods exported from the country. Now, this will be normally on very few products, because no country want to stop export of products, but there will be some product which the country doesn't want to export, so they will impose an export tariff on that. Import tariff is a tariff levied on the goods imported on the country, which is we popularly known as import duties. Now, import duties can be on normally the basic duties, there would be other duties, there would be a ADD, which is an anti-dumping duty, which is imposed sometimes. There can be some other additional duties also which the government can impose from time to time. But there is also transit tariff. Now, sometimes the goods have to pass from a particular country. Like, for example, let's say the example of India. Now, goods have to pass from India to Nepal. Now, if Nepal has to import they have to pass the goods through India. There is no other option for them. So, goods will normally come to Kolkata, and from Kolkata, it will move by land to Nepal. Now, here the Indian government can impose a transit tariff. Now, what's a transit tariff? The goods are in transit from year to year. So, it can impose a transit tariff, can be levied, when the goods are passing through India to Nepal. Now, tariffs may either be in the form of ad valorem basis, or they could be also on a specific type of basis. Like ad valorem duties would be your basic duties normally. Now, specific duties will also include some of the special duties. Then there would be ADDs, that is anti-dumping duties, and so on. Now, normally these are on a percentage basis of the goods, or it can be also in terms of value increase, that a minimum number of import value has to be there. Like suppose you are importing the good at say $100, and there would be a restriction that the value for duty purpose has to be $200 possible. So your duty will be charged not on $100 that you have imported, but on the $200 which the government is asking you to charge duty on. Now let us look also in the non-tariff barriers. Now, what are non-tariff barriers? Most common used quotas. Now, what are quotas? Quotas, there will be quotas, there will be subsidies, there will be other measures. So, let's see what are these quotas. Now, quotas refer to a certain numerical value of quantity of goods, or basically, if I have to give you an example, you can import only a certain amount of quantity under that particular quota. So, the government will restrict you from importing more than that quantity. Like, for example, we have this this policy classically in the import of pulses is concerned. Now, you would say we grow a lot of pulses in India. Yes, we do grow, but we import also a lot of pulses from various other regions. Now, every year the government comes up with quota that you can import only this much amount of tur dal or this much amount of other pulses. So, this is a quota restriction. So, you can import only that amount of quota. So, you have to apply to the government to receive that special limit, that how much you can import, and based on that you can import that much data, that much quantity. So, that is a classic example of a quota. Now, if you exceed the quantity, there are penalties levied in case of if the import quantity is more than the allowed limit. So, there will be definitely action taken. Now, this is why this is to be used to protect politically driven and susceptible industries, mostly agriculture, textile, and so on. So you'll find a lot of quotas which you can just Google out, you can check. You'll find a list of items which are restricted to be imported, or which the quantities are restricted to be imported. Now, please don't misunderstand or mix up this with restricted goods of import. That's altogether a different category. Quota goods can be imported, but with a certain quantity limit. Then we have subsidies. Government given subsidies to various manufacturers or various traders. Now, why this is given? This is basically given to support the manufacturer. Okay. Now, this can be given in the form of low interest loans. Like we have classic thing is we have a pre-shipment and post-shipment loans which are given at a much, much lower rate than the market. There can be some cash incentives given, which we earlier used to have DPP, which was scrapped. Then DFRC, which was also scrapped. We have so many different benefits which keep on coming up. Currently also we have duty drawback, which is also existing, which is also similar to a cash incentive. There can be some sort of tax rebates given. Like sometimes the government says that if you export, if you come and set up a plant in this particular location and you export from here, then we will give you tax rebates. Those also are given. Now, all this results in basically cost reductions. Why these are not good, or why these are actually hampering international trade, is because all this basically reduce the cost of the local manufacturer, and they become very competitive with their low cost in where foreign imports are concerned. So basically this initiatives or all these benefits are given so that the cost of production reduces to that extent, and they can compete with the imported goods. Now, also there are various measures to control goods which are not generally, but it can be country specific. Now, like there are embargoes, sometimes there are embargoes issued by UN or the US or the European countries, where they issue embargo that you cannot export to that country or import from that country. Now, in that case, the export and import gets hampered. Fulfilling local needs first. Like for example, if I give you an example, a classic example will be onions. Now, onions in India, if you see every year we come up with a policy where suddenly export of onions is stopped for some time because the local prices start reaching hundreds and 150 rupees or more, sometimes even more. So that time the export of onions is stopped till the time a new crop comes up, and then again the export is started. So this basically is an initiative for fulfilling the local needs first. Cultural based restrictions, sometimes there can be cultural based restrictions. You know, like India, you cannot import beef products in India directly. So there's a cultural based restrictions. There can be administrative delays. Sometimes people don't want to import, the country itself doesn't want to import. So they can be imposed a lot of administrative delay, like sort of, like some products you have to go for undergo testing, some products you undergo 100% examination and so on. There can be currency regulations, which the exporter or which the importer has to address to. But this can be again for a specific time or for specific products only. Again, testing standard, which I just mentioned, that sometimes the government can impose a lot of testing for a particular product to be imported. Like for example, now we have FSSAI or FSSAI, which we say very strongly, where all products, all food products or any product which is used as a food ingredient has to undergo testing when it lands in India. So there is a delay. So a lot of people sometimes back out because traders cannot handle this product. This can be only done by a lot of manufacturers, or you have to be a large scale trader whose suppliers are ready to put all the complex, all the labelings which are required by this particular standards. Now, basis, there are again, we can understand various theories now from now what we discussed about the various quotas or restrictions. Now, we'll understand, trying to understand the various theories that exist in international trade. Now, these theories which are there, which you can see is on the screen, is basically country basis theory. Now, this which include mercantilism, absolute advantage, comparative advantage, and Heckscher Ohlin basis, which is also a popular theory. Then we also have organizational based theories, which include regional economic cooperation, strategic competition at global levels, product life cycle basis, and competitive advantage, which was given by Porter. So let's see each theory as we progress. Now, from challenges, let's move now to some of the theories or basis on which international trade is based on. Now, if you talk about country-based theories, these are few of the theories which are there, which are mercantilism, absolute advantage, comparative advantage, and Heckscher-Ohlin basis. If you talk about the organization basis, then there are also some theories which are related to economic cooperation theory, that is strategic competition at global level theory, or which is also called as a new trade theory. There is a product life cycle basis theory, and there is a competitive advantage theory, which is given by Mr. Porter. So let's understand each of the theories in depth. Now, talking about mercantilism, which is based on the country. Now, mercantilism existed in Europe in the 16th and continued till the 18th century. Now, what is mercantilism basically? Mercantilism gives boost to the exports of the country. The country wants to export more. It is given boost to the governmental regulations of a national economy for the purpose of enhancing state power at the expense of competing national powers. The country basically wants to improve its physical trade position. It doesn't want to go into, it wants to have a surplus trade. It doesn't want to have a deficit in its fiscal. So the policy is aimed basically for accumulating fiscal reserves, you know, and mostly positive. So more exports, less of imports. They also impose a lot of higher tariffs on manufactured goods. So this is how basically it is controlled. Now, moving from that theory, we move to another theory proposed by Adam Smith. Now, this theory basically is called what he named as absolute advantage. Now, what is an absolute advantage theory? Is basically, it basis is the ability of a country to produce goods more efficiently than another country. So, if you find one country producing goods much better than another country, the country gets specialization in that product. The country specializes and can produce more output more efficiently. So the country definitely generates a lot of efficiencies. Now production would become more efficient due to the various incentives to create faster and better production methods, and this also will in turn increase the specialization of that country. Now in your book there is an example where country A, there is a country B, and they are producing products X and product Y. Now country A has an absolute advantage in manufacturing both product X and product Y. But definitely when it has an absolute advantage, it will make more of this product and sell more of these products than country B. Now why, what are the factors which will drive this absolute advantage? It's the availability of your skilled manpower, natural resources such as agriculture and minerals, the favorable climatic conditions are some of the factors which will definitely help the country in gaining this absolute advantage. Now this acquired advantage enables the country to create a stronger image in the global market, because it becomes a leader in production of this sort of products. Like one example is what India has become now, a software, a brand image which has been created by software services. So India has created this strong goodwill in the global market, a brand image where software services are concerned. Here are some more examples of absolute advantage. The Mittal Group, the largest manufacturer of steel globally. Hero Group, largest manufacturer of two-wheelers in the world. British Petroleum, one of the largest world's six super major oil and gas companies. Tata Steel, sixth largest manufacturer in steel globally. Now moving from that theory, from absolute advantage, we have comparative advantage. Now this was proposed by David Ricardo, an English economist, in 1817. Now what this theory basically says, comparative advantage basis is an economic law that demonstrates how protectionism, that is mercantilism, is not required for free trade. Now the differences definitely are very subtle. Now comparative advantage occurs when a country cannot produce a product more efficiently than the other country, but however it can produce that product better and more efficiently than other goods. Again, you have an example over there in your group. Please go through the example. Now where it talks about that one country, though it doesn't have an advantage over the other country, but one of the product which is manufactured is much, it has an advantage of manufacturing that product better than the other products. That is a comparative advantage theory. So comparative advantage focuses on the relative production differences, whereas absolute advantage looks only in the absolute productivity. Then we move on to Heckscher-Ohlin theory. Now Elie Heckscher and Bertil Ohlin put forward this theory. Now this focused attention, this basically theory focused on how a country could achieve comparative advantage by producing products that utilizes factors that were abundant in the country. Now this goes with the theory, this goes with your normal understanding of economics, is if any factor is easily available in a particular country, definitely the price will be lower for that factor. But if a factor which is not available in that particular country, the price will be definitely higher for that product. Now it gives emphasis on countries' production factors such as land, labor, electricity, logistics, and a capital. Now also called for as factor production theory, factor proportion basis theory, it mentions that the countries who would produce and export goods that require resources or factors that were in great supply and therefore cheaper production factors. That's what I mentioned, is if a production factor is available in large quantity, definitely the price will be much, much lower. So this theory proposes that the whole production will use those kind of resources or those kind of factors and will do production at a much cheaper rate and export. For example, India has become an optimal location for labor intensive industry because of the large labor force that we have. So any labor intensive industry such as textile, gems and jewelry, etc. would be of more advantage or would be more flourishing in India. Now product life cycle basis, now you have to understand the product life cycle, how a product life cycle goes through. It goes through various stages, right? It from the initial stage, which is the introduction stage, then it goes to a growth stage, it goes to a maturity stage, a saturation stage, and then it starts declining. Now this theory takes this concept into picture, and it says that basically when there is a when a product is at the initial stage or introduction stage, a limited quantity will be produced for the local market. Now manufacturers will not produce large scale because they don't know what is how the product is going to sell, how the consumer is going to react, and so on. So the quantity which is produced is much lower. In the growth and the maturity stage, where market has now accepted the product, the demand is increasing. That is the time the company may set up manufacturing facilities to increase the production and supply, because availability of the product is very important when the demand increases. So at this point of time, the company is going to invest more and set up manufacturing facilities to cater to the demand which is available. When it reaches the maturity state, it also will start manufacturing in other locations to take some cost advantage, again locally of course. So it will try to manufacture more and try to have some cost advantage also, so that they can gain or get more profits. Further moving, when the product starts going into saturation or at the decline stage, the product becomes now more vulnerable to price change, because customer will now start comparing on the price aspect also. Now this is a time where the company will start looking out into different locations within the country and abroad, and also start importing some of the products. So this may result in importing the finished product or sometimes even better raw materials to have a cost advantage. So the company will now try to get a cost advantage during the decline or during the saturation stage. Then we move to another theory proposed by Michael Porter, which is called as the competitive advantage basis theory. Now what this theory suggests? It states that the organization that enjoys competitive advantage is much better and stronger to do international business than other organizations in any other country. Now if you are based in a particular location and you are already strong and enjoying a lot of competitive advantages in the local business, that is a time you can start actually looking out for international business. Basically, that's how the thought process is. Now according to the theory, this competitive advantage theory is based on the following aspect. It is based on factor conditions. It is based on competition related measures, demand conditions, and supportive conditions. Now factor conditions basically are the supply side aspect, which includes land, infrastructure, manpower, and natural resources available. The competitive and related measures are the ability of an organization to make the assessment of the existing competitive scenario and to act accordingly. Then we have demand conditions. Demand conditions are market side parameters that include the quantum of the market, its progressiveness and suitability of quality products or adhering to a specific product standards. Related to supporting industry represents the interaction within the industry segments to gain maximum competitiveness advantage for an organization. Now what are the advantages of all these bases that we have been talking about? For international business, such trade bases are helpful in gaining insight into other countries' market. That is one of the major thing what these theories help you understand. Now, industry lobbies exist in all countries and are doing their work to remove various trade restrictions and to have free trade environment. Now, knowledge of these theories, when you have knowledge about these theories and knowledge about other markets, the international business manager gets the knowledge and can use or utilize this knowledge when he wants to venture into new countries or new markets, where they want to venture into various joint ventures or where they want to establish various branches and so on. Now, new basis of international business. Now, according to Gross and Berman, international business have been evolving, and we know it has been changing over times, and it has changed drastically in the last 3 decades. Now, there is no single theory which can be used, you know, to validate the evolution of international business and the association of with domestic business and development of, you know, strategics and relevant strategies and operations. But you have to use all theories comparatively to understand how this business is evolving. However, this is changing and there are new businesses also which are coming up, are emerging into the international business. Now, international business is complex, we all know, and may be influenced by so many things, such as now wars which are taking place. We find a lot of natural calamities which are taking place in one location. We are getting extreme rainfall, where other locations are getting extreme heat and so on. Wars also play a very important role where international trade is concerned. Now, so many other events are occurring around us. If you see, one of the events last year which we are still facing is the COVID-19 pandemic which happened, which has also changed trade. If you see initially what figures we see is trade has dropped down drastically in this last year. This is all affecting several countries, you know, and resulting in overall reduction of international business trade. Now, all these factors, this has increased the selection aspects of international business in terms of which countries suitable to do business with or which not. Now, there are a lot of trade wars happening between countries. Recent trade war which we know is the US and China trade war which is happening. The Brexit, we cannot forget Brexit, because that has also affected trade with the European Union, and the whole structure of the Union will change after the Brexit. So now let's understand the new bases which are behind international businesses. There are four of which are listed on your screen, which are social aspects, economic aspects, political aspects and physical environment. Now let's try to understand them. Now, social aspects basically are those which are driven by nationalism, religion and ethnicity. Now, this is all about your social connections, your relationships with your family, friends, colleagues, other citizens and so on. Now, basically this allows you to cooperate in multiple domains and allows you to lead rich, multifaceted lives. They are generally driven by moral narratives supported by institution, resulting in personal empowerment. Then there are economic aspects which are basically market driven. The economic paradigms are market driven globalization. Now, this talk about they are, of course, globalization is very important for us, but then again not at the cost of local communities. There has been local market, there has been local manufacturing, there has been local communities which have been time and again throughout the ages dealing into particular products. Now, globalization should not actually, you know, hamper them or destroy them totally. Of course, we also need to globalize. Many of the Indian companies are also moving abroad. They are taking over a lot of other companies. Now, in this context, organized economic policies at the micro level, at the medium level, or the macro level are called for basically. Associates with contemporary endeavors in the political and social domain are very important. Now, the recent government incentive which they have launched about production linked incentives scheme is also one of the classic example of an economic aspect for international business. There is also political aspect. Now, this again will be driven by nationalism, religion, ethnicity. Now, under this paradigm, nationalism serves national goals and may be viewed as a mean of pursuing enlightened nationalism. Now, in this context, new nationalism can become a mean of supporting enlightened regionalism, localism and individualism. Now, the classic example we can give is now the initiative by the current government which talks about Make in India. To make India Atmanirbhar. So Atmanirbhar India through Make in India is one of the initiatives which can be seen in this regard. Then there are, this is a physical environment. Now this paradigm are about recognizing the facts that the ultimate purpose of business and policy is to promote basically human prosperity. So if human prosperity is not there with all the changes in the business environment, then this is of no use. It involves more than achieving aggregate economic outcomes, such as pursuing higher economic growth rate. Now, the closing case which is there is talking about India's losing its comparative advantage. So please do read it. But how would I like to close this? Is simple as international trade is evolving. It has not remained the same throughout the ages. With every century, with every years to come, every decade to come, it has been changing. It has been evolving. It is getting complex. Some say it is getting simpler. So international trade has been changing over time, and it will keep on changing. Please do read this case, which is there in your books. It will help you to understand how India can make a competitive advantage over other countries which around its borders, and how India can come up and be successful where global trade or international trade is concerned. Thank you.